HiBridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Why Did I Come Into This Room? A Candid Conversation About Aging by Joan London, read by Joan London. Dedication. I dedicate this book to my female readers. This book was written because of you. All of you who spent your mornings with me for 2 decades as I hosted Good Morning America, my morning friends, I hold you close to my heart. All of you who connect with me day in and day out on my social media platforms, sharing your concerns and your stories, you've become an extended family of sorts. And to all of you whom I've met as I've crisscrossed this nation speaking at events, thank you for your continued support. I know it's a giant cliche, but we are truly in this boat together. As women, we experience aging differently than our male counterparts. It is a journey that can leave us feeling frightened, frustrated, and alone at times. I want to shine a light on those dark moments that would then help all of us feel more empowered and less alone. Women fuel my passion to research and learn more about how we can better care for our health and our happiness in order to age more successfully. You've sent me on a mission to seek the answers to those questions that each of us individually might be embarrassed to talk about. In addition to seeking answers, I felt compelled to start an open dialogue about aging in this country. As I discuss in this book, aging has changed dramatically, and we need to be better prepared. An open dialogue will help us understand how our female bodies function and the changes that naturally come with the aging process. It can also serve to remind us all that there is a silver lining to aging: reflection, gratitude for a life well lived, time for relaxation, and new opportunities for many of us. It is up to us to replace the dismal expectations of aging with an anticipation of enjoyment, and yes, even excitement if you plan it that way. That is the mindset that I ask you to hold as you read this book. Again, women are all in this boat together, and we can learn from one another and take strength from one another. As I wrote this book, I never lost sight of my purpose: to empower you, to give you tools, and yes, to give you a laugh now and then, and to make sure that none of you feel you are on this aging journey alone. You most certainly are not. Introduction. Esther Williams once said, "The wisdom acquired with the passage of time is a useless gift unless you share it." And with that, aging ain't for sissies. I had a hair-raising experience a while back that sent shivers up and down my spine. I was sitting in my office, ready for a scheduled phone interview with The Hollywood Reporter. I had done many interviews with them over the years, especially during my time at Good Morning America. But now, I was doing special reports for the Today Show, and this interview was to promote one of my upcoming series on the baby boomer generation. It was about the importance of social connections as we age and the power of having friendships. As soon as the reporter said hello, I noticed that he sounded rather young. But that didn't surprise me as much as the first question that he asked. He began, "So, Miss London, what will it be like for you returning to morning TV as a senior citizen?" I sat there stunned for a moment, doing my best to regain my composure. I'd actually never been called a senior citizen before, nor had I ever thought of myself as one. I didn't want to come across as defensive, but I couldn't help feeling a little shocked by the realization that he saw me that way, a.k.a. old. Did it sting? Like a bee. I wanted to say, "Dude, talk to me when your facial hair starts growing." Well, thankfully, he moved on. Clearly, I did not. It happened a few years ago, yet I'm still thinking about it. And why is that? I guess because it dawned on me that this young man Googled me, saw that I was in my 60s, and then labeled me accordingly. It made me think, what else does that automatically make me in his eyes? A has-been? Someone who is no longer relevant in today's youth-obsessed world? Or maybe just too old to be a woman on TV? It felt as though there was a hidden implication that I should be frightened. Hey, maybe they should build a chairlift on the set for me or give me my own motorized scooter. Well, I wasn't scared. I have faced cancer head-on and survived it. I have 7 children, and I've interviewed some of the most amazing people in the world. I could handle this age thing. Yeah, bring it on. All right, so maybe I'm a little oversensitive about being called a senior citizen. I mean, technically, I do fit the age requirement. Even so, I don't feel like one. Whenever I receive mail marketed to me as a senior, I trash it. It can't hit the receptacle fast enough. In fact, sometimes I'll shove it way down to the bottom of the bin so no one else sees it. Life alert offer? No, not mine. Somebody obviously made a mistake sending that to me, and if it stays in my possession too long, I kind of fear that it might rub off on me. Oh, no. How long do I have before a place for Mom calls to ask if I need a place for me? I must confess, although I reacted to that reporter's comment this way, the jarring start to our interview really got me thinking about age and ageism. The word old, it's almost a dirty word in our society. While I definitely feel older, I absolutely don't feel old, and I certainly have no shame about my age. It is, after all, just a number. It might not be the lowest number, but it's definitely not the highest number. And when it feels like someone is calling you out as a senior, as it clearly did with me and that young reporter, it can sound as if you have some, I don't know, horrible contagious disease that makes everyone look at you differently, almost with pity. It's an awful thing, one I regret giving any credence to when it happened. But let's be honest, it happens, and I'm human. Could this insecurity I was feeling be fostered by our culture's inherent fear of aging? Oh, I'm certain of that. I found myself wondering, when exactly did I pivot in other people's minds from being a normal, active, contributing member of society capable of competing with the rest of the population to a card-carrying senior citizen? And why did that have to make me less than, especially when I know I am still very capable of contributing to this world, especially in some ways maybe more capable than I ever have been before? Have you ever been confronted with an experience like that that just left you feeling that way? On the bright side, senior citizens get numerous financial benefits from the government. They enjoy discounts from private companies. So yeah, we get to pay a little less at the box office to see a movie. And maybe you can take a larger deduction on your taxes. Thank you very much. But at what cost? I worry that this could mean I won't be welcome in line with everyone else who still wants or needs to work and make a difference and be relevant or even just buy hip clothes and get away with wearing them unjudged. Our society always seems so focused on youth. Advertisers, fashion designers, even car manufacturers routinely target that market. Because youth is so highly valued, it's almost natural to assume that getting older is something to be devalued. In other parts of the world, seniors are revered for their knowledge and their life experience, whereas our Western culture seems to view humanity the same way we view products: use while fresh, and then ditch for something newer and fresher. I just don't want to be viewed as having outlived my shelf life. That stinks. especially when I know I have so much more to give. Writing about my life always feels a bit like laying on a psychiatrist's couch. It kind of forces me to dig deep, to delve into the scary places where my fears and my worries reside, and to reflect on the choices I've made so far. I mentally put myself there because I believe that sharing our journeys, including our personal stories, the mistakes we've made, and the lessons we've learned, may help others, or at the very least, amuse them. I once heard, you don't inspire others by being perfect. You inspire them by how you deal with your imperfections. For this reason, I've shared some of my most personal and difficult challenges with viewers and readers over the years. My last big overshare, as you will recall, was in 2014, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. People magazine asked me to appear on their cover, bald, for that story. Yeah, bare-headed bald, as in no scarf, no hat, no vanity. As I contemplated writing this book, I thought, hey, if I could muster up the nerve to do that, I think I can share just about anything. So here I am, nearly 3 decades and 8 books after the release of my first publication, sharing my innermost thoughts about the very latest issue that I'm coping with, aging. Of course, this means I must be willing to admit in print and aloud for all of you listening to this audio version that I am concerned about the aging process, and I must also confide how I'm faring in that process. Fortunately, it also means I get to explore and make the distinction between being older and being old, not just for the benefit of those at a certain age, but for readers at every age. Part 1. The Mind. As Mark Twain once said, aging is mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Chapter 1. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? What is age, really? Is it as important a description of who we are as most people would have us believe? Or is it just a number on a piece of paper that reflects that moment in time when we were born? Our Western culture is careful to document everyone's birth date and to use that information to help characterize us throughout our years. But did you know that there are places in our world where the concept of age doesn't even exist? I visited one such place nearly 2 decades ago, and I must say, it had a profound effect on me that has lasted all these years. I wanted to take my 3 eldest daughters, Jamie, Lindsay, and Sarah, somewhere during their high school spring break that was totally different from anywhere else they had ever been. They were teenagers at the time, and I knew they'd be leaving the nest soon. Of course, my aim was to kind of open their eyes to the many different ways that people live and to stir in them an appreciation for those differences. I knew exactly where to take them. Morocco. This mother-daughter adventure began in Casablanca, a bold, bustling city teeming with mosques and colorful bazaars. From there, we drove into the Moroccan countryside toward the more ancient cities of Rabat and Fez. It took almost a day of traveling through some of the most extraordinary mountains and gorges to get to a small town called Erfoud, which you might call the last outpost of Moroccan civilization since it literally sits at the edge of the Sahara Desert. There, we got into yet another vehicle, a 4x4, which took off into the legendary dunes where the shapes of the landscape constantly shift with the winds. On our first night in the desert, we enjoyed a traditional Moroccan dinner and rested in elaborate tents that were lined with brightly colored tapestries and dotted with tiny crystal beads that twinkled in the moonlight. It was like the interior of a beautiful genie bottle. We were glamping, before it was popular. We awakened before dawn to mount camels for a 30-minute ride out to a sand dune where we would watch the sunrise over the Sahara. The thought of sharing this exquisite moment with my daughters was overwhelmingly joyous. I knew we'd never forget sharing such an experience together. It was still dark as we emerged from our tents. We could barely make out the silhouettes of the camels, a dozen of them, all laying down in a row waiting for us. In order to protect us from blowing sand, our guides wrapped our heads with large, colorful scarves so that only our eyes were exposed. For anyone who hasn't ridden a camel before, the process of getting on them is pretty weird. Once you're on board, the camels first raise up their back legs so that you feel like you're going to topple forward right over the camel's head. And then they get their front legs up under them. It takes a moment to feel stable and secure, but it's pretty cool once you do. Our camels began to quietly walk single file through the soft sand, with nothing but dunes in front of us, until finally the caravan stopped. We dismounted our camels, and the guide pointed to the top of a dune. We started climbing. Once at the top, we sat and we waited. Sunrise in the Sahara. It truly was an unforgettable experience that no doubt we will all remember as long as we live. It was so worth the wait. I'm really glad we didn't have phones with cameras or Instagram or Facebook or Twitter back then. It allowed us to live in that moment, to experience events with our eyes and not through our cameras. Today, it's kind of hard to do that. Once back on the road, as desert turned into flatland, our guide spotted a tribe of nomadic Bedouin sheepherders. With the hope of possibly meeting them, he pulled over to the side of the road. He struck up a conversation, and they explained that they move with the changing seasons, picking up their tents and their belongings and taking them all along with them through the desert and the surrounding mountains from one location to another. When our guide asked if they would mind showing us their home, they were happy to oblige. So upon entering one of their tents, we were greeted by a warm and welcoming older woman who seemed to be the matriarch of the family. Perhaps she was the grandmother. It was hard to determine her age, as her skin had been quite weathered by the harsh desert sun and wind. I can still recall her face. She would have made a compelling subject for a sunscreen ad in our country. But in her country, she was just quite strong and beautiful. When we spoke with her, we mostly talked about her family and her children, but ultimately, I asked her how old she was. The woman looked at me as if she didn't know what I was talking about. I reiterated my question through our translator, and the woman explained to me that they had no clocks, no calendars, and that they lived their lives according to sunrises, sunsets, and the seasons, and no one knew their age. It was such an eye-opening moment. So how old was she? Did it matter? Obviously, it didn't. Was there a lesson to be learned from her response? It certainly made me question why age matters so much to us in the Western world. What that elder Bedouin tribeswoman said in that Moroccan tent that day changed my view of age forever. When we returned home from our trip, I took stock of the way we measure our lives, of how often we mark the years and annual Hallmark moments, and I started asking, why? We celebrate every 12 months with a party, and of course with another birthday card, and as we get older, those cards joke more and more about sagging body parts, faulty memory, and of course about being over the hill. Your birthday shouldn't be humiliating or embarrassing. I'm not sure when we started describing our abilities, our strengths, even our sexual appeal, in terms of our age. Or when we started saying things such as, I look pretty good for my age. I mean, who needs a qualifier like that? Certainly, the weathered tribeswoman in Morocco didn't. That brave, strong woman who would pull down the tent, tie up all of her belongings, and set out into the desert, guided only by the sun and stars whenever the seasons changed, would have no time for such nonsense. That inspiring woman, who had never received a birthday card telling her that she was too old to keep her family and her tribe moving, would be appalled. I'll bet you she never said, "Hey, I gather everything up and move our entire camp like a 20-year-old. She just does what must be done. I don't know about you, but I kind of envied her and her way of living. If I'm being completely candid, I've always kind of hated birthdays, and especially since that trip to Morocco. They just feel unimportant and almost a little annoying to me. In fact, I have come to believe that if they are not a celebration of everything we are and everything we are still capable of becoming, they're actually bad for us. They can affect our psyche, our opinion of ourselves, and worse, they can negatively impact our expectations in life, our continuing personal growth, and the further development of our abilities. Of course, none of us is likely to move into a tent in the Sahara Desert anytime soon, but can't we try to be a little less preoccupied with our age according to our birth certificate? I believe we can, and that's one of the reasons I've written this book, to get us all rethinking the subject of age and its meaning in our lives. So, how would you answer the question? How old would you be if you didn't know your age? Have you ever thought about it before? So go ahead, contemplate it right now. Ask yourself, how old do you feel, or how old do you think you look? But really, more simply, how old are you in your mind? What's your number? If you're like most people, that age is probably younger than the age according to your birth certificate. In fact, for most of us, it's a lot younger. I've done this exercise with many different people, and they're often taken aback at first, but they eventually settle into an age that feels right for them. And if they're past 50, I find that they almost always pick an age that is at least 10 years younger than their actual age. Oh, and for those of you who imagine yourself to be older than you are, I mean, there may be mitigating factors such as your current state of health, but I certainly hope that you didn't respond that way because society has convinced you that you're older than you are. Psychologists say that how we perceive ourselves has a huge influence on how we present ourselves. It impacts how we conduct our lives and what we think we can do. For most of us, it's something that we're really not even conscious of. I once heard, the trouble is when a number, your age, becomes your identity, you've given away your power to choose your future. Wow. Look, if that's true, then our actual age isn't really as important as the age we picture ourselves to be, the age we feel we are. More than our biological age, can greatly impact our future, the goals we allow ourselves to set, and the strides we have yet to make. Okay, so then age is just a number that can change, depending on who's asking, of course. Today, I pick 45. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it. But as we age, we focus on being younger. Just as when we were growing up, we always focused on being older. I can remember being a little kid, dreaming about becoming a teenager. 13 seemed like such a magical age. I couldn't wait to get there. And once I hit 13, 16 became the desired age, because then I could drive a car. And older girls just seemed so much cooler than me. Well, 16 came and went, and you likely know the next part of the story. 21! That was the goal, so I could vote and drink. Well, legally. Ironically, the year I turned 21, the legal voting age was lowered to 18, and some states even followed by dropping the legal drinking age to 18. It really wasn't until I was in my 20s that I generally loved my age. I enjoyed being a young adult. I was at the beginning of my career in broadcasting, living in my own place, and feeling as if the world was my oyster. I had all the perks of being an adult, but was still young enough that older women would still call me youthful and fresh-faced. Those years were a time of life filled with so much freedom. There were no children or responsibilities yet, and so much possibility and excitement were still awaiting me. At that point in my life, aging was the last thing I was thinking about. Then, as we progressed through the years, people seemed to be bothered the most with those passages measured in decades. You know, turning 30, 40, 50, 60, and so on. Those are kind of the significant milestones. I wasn't bothered at all with turning 30. I was a first-time mom. I had an awesome new job as co-host of Good Morning America. Life was great. How could I possibly be bothered by that? Frankly, I didn't really mind turning 40 either, since it was a seminal time in my life. I had taken back control of my weight and, in turn, my health and my energy level. I had exited a marriage that made me feel as though I'd kind of put my life on hold for a long time. And I was now a single working mom who was free to make my own life decisions. I wanted to have fun and start dating again, which, by the way, was a rather eye-opening experience. Seems like when you date after divorce, you suddenly feel just as anxious and awkward as a teenager. You question the outfit you're wearing, the small talk you're making, and whether you should even sit through the entree when you realized at the appetizer that this guy was definitely not for you. That's when I learned to always meet for coffee before accepting a dinner date. Even if I didn't enjoy dating all that much, I loved my 40s and the wonderful experiences that it brought to my life. But then when I was staring down 50, I'll admit things began to change a little. That was a much scarier milestone. I mean, did turning 50 signify halftime? Why did that have to make me feel less than when I knew I was still very capable of contributing to the world? In some ways, more capable than I'd ever been before. Was I now over the hill? I mean, does it all go downhill from there? People are living longer and longer in this country, longer than they've ever lived before. Your 60s are not over the hill anymore. It's more like you're up at the top of the hill. And guess what? We can see clearly from up here. We can reflect back on the journey it took to get here, with all its potholes and challenges, and we can be proud of ourselves. We can look forward to a new us that's yet to arrive. I think most people I know in their 50s today are more active and more full of life, frankly, than some millennials I know. They work out with a vengeance, they eat healthy, they take care of their bodies, they do yoga and meditation to stay calm, and I think they love adventure. Is this who the marketers are looking at when they're producing those over-the-hill cards and birthday mugs? I doubt it. Glenn Close once said about aging, all your life you think 60 is ancient, and all of a sudden you find you're 60, and you don't really feel that different. I feel stronger and more engaged. This is the best time of my life. Well, I agree with Glenn. Although I must admit, I didn't completely cherish turning 60, but I asked myself that question. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? And you know what? The answer is still 45. That is my number. Apparently, that's where I got off the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?